I was looking for some YouTube videos or something similar and couldn't really find exactly what I was looking for, but I was looking for one of those cartoons where it shows the a small little itty bitty something causes a snowball that goes down a hill and tackles some cartoon character or something or another. But anyways, before we get too far into that, how many of you live in an area that is you get a lot of snow? You're familiar with the snow. I grew up in Wisconsin, and it is not unordinary for us to get... And this is one of the few years that there's more than just me here from Wisconsin, so it's kind of exciting. But I grew up there, and it wasn't out of the ordinary for us to get 12-inch blizzards from time to time, so that kind of thing was normal. Not much changes from your day-to-day life. We were lucky to get 2 hours off of school when it snowed, 10 inches overnight. But in Louisiana, it's not the same. But as you don't know, I'm from Louisiana now. And two years ago, Grayson's got a couple pictures. We got about 6 to 7 inches of snow. For those of you that have been to Blood River in Louisiana, this is the front of our church. This was the first time in over 70 years they got more than an inch. So this, people that, like, the average age in our church is really probably in the 60s area, and all of them were telling me that they could not remember a time that they actually had snow stick to the ground for more than, like, 15 or 20 minutes. I mean, it's like, it's rare. Like, in the morning, you'll wake up and you'll find a little bit of snow on the ground on really cold nights, but that's it. But we ended up getting 6 inches of snow, and it was just everything that could possibly shut down. It was horrible. There's no way to straighten out the streets. So it's like you try to go and get things. In the radio or in the news, you hear anything that says that there might be snow. The bread aisle, the milk aisle, and all the bottled water you can find, it will be sold that weekend. So I think they're trying to sell their stuff, so they just go ahead and throw that stuff out there. But go to the next one. Here's my dog, and if you ever want to have a fun little time, play fetch with a snowball. Because my dogs aren't used to snow either. And so we're out there playing with our dogs in the snow, and they're confused as all get up because they don't know what snow is either. So we're out there, and my dog, he chases anything that moves. And so I was grabbing the snowball, and I picked it up, and I threw it all the way across just a bit of nowhere, just threw it, and he went chasing after it, and he brought it back. And it was hilarious because we were actually playing fetch with a snowball. I think it kind of confused him as it was getting smaller as he was leaving. But anyways, the next one. There's my beautiful wife. It looks like you can't see it too well. How many of you have ever made a snowman? To make a short story long, I got all this way just to talk about snowmen. But anyways, how do you start off building a snowman? You start off with a small little bit. And now, there are certain circumstances in snow. For those of you that aren't too familiar with snow, every time it snows, you can't build a snowman, right? Yeah. If it's too cold, what? If it's too wet, it doesn't work. So, you kind of have to have good circumstances for it to build snow. And so you start off with a very, very small ball. And then you put it down into the snow and you push it. And as you push it, what happens to the snowball? It gets bigger. It continues to add more snow. And so the longer you push it, what? The bigger it gets. When we were making plans for fuel, and we're talking 6 months ago, yes, we planned for this. Most of you show up at the very last second, and you don't realize all the back work that goes into this event. But about 6 months ago, me and Chiwa were sitting down, and we were talking about where we wanted to take the messages and the sermons that we're going to get here. And our idea is that if we start off with God, and like that snowball, and just like that snowman that we're getting ready to build, it starts off with something. A snowball does not get huge on its own. It starts off with one person or something, some force, some beginning, starts in a small ball. And then it gets pushed. And as it gets pushed, it grows. And so what we're thinking was, is if we start off with God, if I can start off, where's the first one's here? We start with God. So the day one, we're thinking, we'll start with God. And then God, He motivated others. And so we look at some Old Testament examples. He motivated others to get involved. And so we looked at some of the Old Testament things, and then those other people, they motivated Jesus. Jesus got motivated by, you know, someone mentioned it, He didn't spend 30 years doing nothing. He was learning and growing and building, and He was learning the Scriptures so that when He was ready to be tempted and to do His ministry, He was prepared. And so, after Jesus did, we take Jesus' example, and then we move. We look at the example that He lived and the example that He did. We also can look back at the Old Testament and the things that they did. And we go back to the beginning where God started all. But it's a process of a snowball that continues to get bigger. But it doesn't stop there. Because today, after we move, we have to move other people. We have to move. But without God, there is no movement. So it all started with God. And so, He starts the snowball, and as it gets bigger, we get run over by it. And so, as you notice here in the snowball, it doesn't look like I'm too upset about getting crushed and clobbered into a snowball, because when God comes into your life, and Christ comes into your life, and you get caught into this snowball, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And now, camp here is incredibly special to me, because this is the place where I first got ran over by a snowball. This is the first place that I came to know Jesus Christ. And it was interesting how I ended up being here. And it's probably not too far than some of you other guys. I was 14, 15 years old. And like I said before, I'm from Wisconsin. We had a very small church. We'd only been open 2 or 3 years. I was the only person in our church that was old enough to come to camp. And so I was thinking to myself, do I really want to go to this? Because I was introduced to it and I was asked, do you want to go to this camp? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know a single person there. I'm going to be the only person from my church to go. I'm going to be the only person from my state to go. I'm not really sure if I want to go. And then my youth leader, my pastor at the time, who, by the way, I kind of was building a pretty close relationship with him, and even to this day, I see him more as an older brother. He kind of understood the way that I think. And what he said was, he said, if you go to this camp, you're going to have fun. You're going to get to go and you're going to play sports. If anyone knows me, I'm probably one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet. And it's not too far-fetched. Me and Jerry had some fun. And so after that, I was like, well, I could probably play sports about anywhere. But then he went on and he said, there's going to be pretty girls in there. Sign me up. Whatever it's going to take, we're going to go to camp. He knew me pretty well. He knew what it'd take. And so, but anyways, I want to get to the idea. I went for all the wrong reasons. I came to this camp for all the wrong reasons. I came here to come having nothing but a good time and hopefully find a pretty girl. I'm being honest. But, although I went for all the wrong reasons, that week I met Jesus Christ. That week, I met Jesus Christ. Now, I knew of Him. I even went to church. So I knew of Jesus. I knew of God. But it made no difference in my life other than I had an hour time frame once a week that I had to show up for because my dad made me. But there, at that day, I remember it pretty clearly. I remember at the communion service, I was thinking to myself, I didn't understand what communion was. And someone was telling me, and all those things, just like last night, you've seen the emotions that kind of run over when we start getting into those deep topics. It hit me. It hit me like a ton of bricks. And I decided that I wanted to change. I went home. I got baptized. And from that day forward, my life has been completely different. Now, I've slipped up and I've fallen. Still do. But I've completely changed. I want you to open up your Bibles to John 4. In John 4, we see a similar situation. John 4, starting in verse 7. I'll give you a second to find it. If not, it's behind me on the thing. We see Jesus here. He's sitting at a well. And he looks in and it appears that he's waiting to get a drink because he doesn't have a bucket. So he has to wait for somebody who has a bucket to get this water out for him. And the part of me was thinking that maybe he's doing some outreach here. Maybe he's going out and he's finding an opportunity to talk to somebody. That's my speculation. But anyways, he goes in the middle of a central place where not too many people know about him, not too many people know about God, at least not the way that he thinks they should. And he meets this woman. And we notice in the beginning of this conversation, this woman does not know who Jesus is. She doesn't know who he is, and we actually see that she has maybe a little bit of an attitude with him. But if you notice, as we go through this passage, and I'm going to read quite a bit of passage here in a second. As we go through this passage, notice the way she addresses Jesus. Her opinion of Jesus is going to change as this conversation goes on. So in verse 7, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. It almost gives me the impression that maybe his disciples may not have approved, and we're going to see that again later. But the Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with the Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you the living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and his herds?" And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He doesn't quite get what he's saying. She's thinking to herself, if I could get out of doing this daily activity, this daily chore. They didn't have the luxury that we have today of nice running water faucets. She had to go get it. But he told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is that you have five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you've just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you're a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim the true place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know. For salvation is from the Jews, yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah called Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." I know it's a long bit of scripture, and it's really hard to keep up with it all. But if you were paying attention to the way that she addressed him, she starts off the conversation calling him a Jew. And in the same way today, what does it mean if I were to call somebody a Jew? Other than like, they're Jewish. Well, what does the connotation of the word Jew mean? It's an insult. You're taking advantage of, ripping off. It's certainly not a compliment. And in the same way, because we're looking at two groups of people that aren't, that don't get along very well with the Samaritans and the Jews, there was some tension between them. So when she starts this conversation off, she's calling him a Jew in verse 9. She calls him a Jew. And that's how she starts this conversation off. But we look in verse 11. Verse 11, she calls him sir. So at this point, she's intrigued by this man who comes and talks to her. After just getting done insulting him, maybe she kind of changes her mind a little bit and she starts to at least address him. She may not like him. She still has a difference with him. But here she's offering him maybe just a little bit of respect. She's curious about this idea of him thinking that he might be greater than her ancestor Jacob. But she's not quite there yet. She's still got a little hardened heart. She's still got a little bit of distance between them. And then she goes on and she talks to him a little bit about her past. Or what he tells her a little bit about her past. And we notice in verse 19, she calls him a prophet. We see a little bit of progression here that she realizes that, wait a minute. Now when you start using the word prophet, this is a pretty big title. This is somebody that gets direct revelation from God. She's acknowledging that this person here is from God. So we see that little bit of respect that she's offering. We see that it grows just a little bit more. And I think she might be a little bit frightened. She's a little bit frightened to the point where she doesn't know exactly what's going on. Because if this guy was from God and he's telling her about her past, she doesn't really have a clean slate, does she? She doesn't really have a good past. So she's probably a little frightened about what he has to think about her past. But you see her respect growing. And then if you look in verse 25, she tentatively uses the word Messiah. And I think, that she's kind of throwing this out there. She's like, I know what you're talking about. I know the things that you're getting at. Is it possibly true that you might be this person? I know of this person. But are you he? She thinks she might know. So maybe she's just carefully finding a way to ask him. And we look in verse 29. In verse 29, this is after the part we talked about, and we'll get there in just a second. She calls him Christ. You see the progression that went from one point where she starts off in the beginning calling him a Jew. And we see this progression where she grows and she gets closer. And a relationship in just a short conversation has gone from an insult to accepting him as Christ. That's huge for such a short conversation. So she changed so much when she met Jesus Christ that she went from an insult to the highest compliment he could possibly offer. Put up there verse 27 through 29. And we'll read this. Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with the woman. Now, like I said, we have tension here. We have two groups of people that don't get along. And so when his followers come up, they're also Jews, and so they have that natural, almost hate for the Samaritans. And so they kind of come up and they're, what the heck are you doing? Talking with this woman. But no one asked, what do you want? Oh boy, you're what's the best. What do you want, or why are you talking with her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? Notice how one afternoon completely changed her life. One afternoon, just one conversation, and here she was working. She had her water bucket. She was filling water so she could go to work and do the things that she's supposed to be doing. And we notice in those verses, what does she do with the bucket? She drops it. She completely leaves what she was doing before to go out and to do something different. And just one conversation, her life changes. And I think too often in our lives, we think that we're too busy doing the things that we think we have to do. Here, this woman dropped everything that she had going on because she met Jesus Christ. She met the person that she knew of before. But when she really met him and knew him, she changed. Before meeting Jesus, she was open and she said, I know of this person. I know of this Messiah. And a lot of you came to camp this week, you could say, I know of Jesus Christ. I know of him. But that's a lot different than knowing him. Knowing Jesus is a lot different than knowing of him. And so hopefully this week, if you haven't met Jesus, I hope you did. And hopefully this week, like the woman at the well, your life, your priorities, the things that you're doing will change. Things will be different. And so what I want to ask you is, what are you going to do from here? Is this just going to be a week that you come, you enjoy, you hang out, you cry together, you sing together, we grow together? But are you going to pick your bucket right back up and go home and go back to the normal day of life? Or are you going to leave your bucket here? Are you going to drop your bucket here and go home and be a different person doing different things than you were before you got here? And that's going for somebody who has met Jesus before or not. If we're not continually growing, continually changing, we're missing out on what we're supposed to be doing. We're missing out on what God calls us to do. And so, for those of you who haven't believed and who don't know Jesus or haven't met Jesus, and maybe this is your first time, according to Acts 8:12 or 19:5, when the people believed and heard these messages, their next step was baptism. Once you accept that, and once you believe it, that's something that you need to look into. And so if you haven't met Jesus Christ before this week, and maybe this week something different's going on in your life, or maybe something's tugging on your mind or tugging on your thoughts, that may be something you want to look into. But also look what she did. And we're going to look at 39 through 42. Verses 39 through 42. There. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them. And he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves. And we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. This woman, after her life changed, after she believed, after she met Christ, she dropped everything that she was doing and she went out and she started telling other people. And the thing is, this must have been a pretty rough thing for her. How many of you ever done something that you're incredibly ashamed of? Go ahead, I can put 2 hands up. If I had another, I'd put it up too. Here she is, and she's going through, and she's opening up some of the deepest wrongs that she knows that she's done and she's ashamed of. And she's going out, this man, this Christ, told me everything that I've ever done. And her admitting and opening up these deep wounds that she probably had within herself, she went out there, and she no longer cared about her past. She no longer cared about the things that happened So if you're holding on to things that you're so ashamed of, that you're so worried about other people finding out, leave it with your bucket. Leave that worry, leave that shame, and become a new person and change. Because that's what she did. And she went out and she told other people. It encouraged them to change their lives. And that's kind of the idea with the snowball, is that once we get wrapped up in the snowball's not supposed to stop. We're supposed to keep it rolling. We're supposed to keep going. We're supposed to keep moving forward. So just as God started that ball moving and He's continually helping it moving forward, and those Old Testament preachers, they got that, you can tell by all the things that they did, that they kept that snowball rolling. We saw that Christ and the things that He did, He continued that snowball, and it's getting bigger. And it keeps rolling. And seeing some of the people here, we're keeping that ball rolling. But are we getting more people to keep it rolling? And so, what I really want to compare is this conversation with Jesus and this week at camp. This week at camp can make such a difference in your life. And that's why so many people schedule next year's camp a year in advance. People have already got their schedules lined up for the next 2 years because that's how far we know for sure what we're doing. That's why you have so many committed staff who take weeks off work. Come and share. And I was talking with somebody, I don't remember who it was. We were talking about, if you look through the staff members that are here at this camp, almost all of them are people that almost, we just couldn't get them to stop coming. We come and we take part in this week, and it's just become such an important part of our week that we just don't want, a part of our year that we just can't miss it. We're willing to give up anything we can do. But as this week is starting to wrap up, I want to give you all an opportunity to respond, not just to this message, not to just this day, but to this week. If something is just pulling on your heart, something is just eating at you, and you feel that you need someone to talk to, we want to provide you that opportunity. So if you've got something that you want to talk about, maybe you met Jesus for the first time this week, and you just want somebody to talk to you about it, we want to give you the opportunity. Maybe you are ready for baptism, and maybe that's something that's been on your heart for a while, and you just haven't got the urge, or you've been waiting for a sign. That's what I did. I thought it was hilarious. I would seriously walk home from school, and I'd be visually looking for God to give me a sign. Like, I wanted to get baptized, but I was just waiting for Him just to come out and just be flame forward. I want you to talk to me. And I was like, I remember looking at street signs and how they're kind of like at a cross, but if you watch their shadows, it kind of creates a cross on the ground. I'm like, maybe. Maybe God's trying to use that street sign to tell me. And I mean, I remember looking and waiting for someone just to specifically ask me, do you want to get baptized? And so maybe you're waiting for that. And so instead of making you go home and look for street signs and a bunch of other weird ways, I want to ask you now, are you ready? Is it something you're interested in? And if it is, I want you to talk to somebody. This is a big one. Maybe you've made that decision, and you've made it a long time ago, but you've fallen away. You've made some mistakes, and there's some things in your life that you know that don't belong, and you want to turn back, and you need some help doing that. Talk to someone. Or maybe this whole week has just been confusing to you. Maybe you've got some questions. Maybe you want some answers. Can't promise you that you're going to get them all, but I want you to talk to somebody. So we're going to ask a couple of our counselors. Before all the counselors get up, I'm going to ask the counselors that are comfortable praying with somebody, comfortable talking with somebody, comfortable answering some maybe possibly difficult questions. to go ahead and walk towards the optimum. Somebody, please. And also, we can have our band come forward. If there's something that's pouring on your heart, whether it's something big, whether it's something small, maybe you don't know, but you just feel like you need to talk to someone, we want to give you that opportunity. So as Aaron comes up here, he's going to play a song. And during these next couple songs, if you've got something on your heart that you want to talk about, talk to somebody about it. Don't wait. Don't push it off. Don't look for something later. Do it now. Be a part of that snowball. Help it and keep it. Continue to move forward.